one and all once again to Dual Wielding. This week, with the launch of the Wii U just in a week away at the time this comes out, we thought it would be an appropriate time to take a look back at the Wii and all that it has brought us, headaches and all. We're actually really light on the normal people this week, actually, it's totally me. Everybody was either busy or did not have a very vested interest in discussing the Wii. It happens, as we'll get to in a second. Instead, we have Phil, who has been a somewhat constant on this show.
Hello, howdy. Thanks for having me back. I've actually been on another Nintendo-centric podcast, so I don't know what that's all about, but Nintendo...
It's not every... We don't typecast here.
Yeah.
I mean, if that was the case, I could just do this whole thing myself if we just want to be Nintendo-centric. And joining us, because he doesn't want to pick just one name, we're going to call him Johnny Ace.
Welcome to the show, I suppose. First-time talker, never listener.
I don't listen to it either, I just have to edit it. But yes, we're going to talk about the Wii and all that has begun. So, I mean, I guess we should start off with all good stories do at the beginning, which would be E3 2005 and the reveal of what was then known as the Nintendo Revolution.
That's right.
And, I mean, does anybody kind of remember their initial thoughts on this system?
Yeah, I think the big question mark at the time of E3 was the controller and how, you know, they were bringing this weird new motion stuff, and everybody's like, what is Nintendo playing at right now? There's even like an old NeoGAF thread being like, this controller is never going to work, the Wii's going to flop, and it was very questionable back then. So that was probably the most interesting thing, is that Nintendo spouted out some like batshit crazy idea, and it was all like, you know, how's this going to turn out?
Go on.
Oh, sorry. I actually barely remember 2005 from at all. It was just a completely unmemorable year. I remember seeing pictures of the controller of Iwata holding it up, but that was about it. So.
I was going to say one of the great things about the pre-Wii Revolution days was the fact that Nintendo revealed the system without actually revealing the controller. So for a couple of months there, you had a bunch of, and this happened with the Wii as well, you had months of people speculating and designing these really off-the-wall controllers. There were some where there was like a screen in the middle of the controller. Who would ever think somebody would do something like that? there was, you know, it was like a remote, it was like a star. So there was all these various different designs. And the same thing kind of happened again with the Wii U. And it's just one of those things. And, I mean, I've been around this web for a long time, so it's always nice. Pre-launch hype is always so interesting when people don't know anything, so they're all finding these janks with these magical devices. And that was one of the fondest things I remember of that time. And then when the actual controller was shown, as Phil mentioned, the people went bananas because it didn't make any sense. It was,
yeah, and my question was, like, how is this controller going to be comfortable? It's in two separate parts, you know, the nunchuck and the Wii remote. How am I going to play, like, can I play games for more than 5 minutes with that controller? It turns out, you know, it was all right. You know, I never had problems.
Like, yeah.
I was going to say, personally speaking, and this is one of my biggest disappointments with Wii U's controller, is that I was a huge fan of this bit controller.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, like, you could put, like, one arm resting on your, like, one hand resting on your chin and another arm somewhere else, and you're still playing the game normally. Like, it's awesome.
Yeah, and that, you know, that's something that people take for granted. I know people still have an issue with it for whatever reason, but it's just one of those things where your hands don't have to be... they don't have to be cramped up on this controller. I mean, granted, most people don't really get hand cramps, but it's nice to kind of have that flexibility. Granted, yes, there's still a distance because you have the cord that attaches the two. But honestly speaking, I don't know anybody who's going to play their games with that wide of a stance.
Yeah,
and I will say this, though, about negatively about the controller, but it's always been a Nintendo staple that they do not have good analog sticks. Like, they're hard, They're not rubberized, you know, like how Xbox and PlayStation have, like, a good rubber feeling on their analog sticks. But, you know, the same thing with the GameCube and the Nintendo 64. They've always had very hard plastic analog sticks, so, but...
I was going to say, I prefer the Wii's analog sticks over the PS3's. I don't really like how to... Because I always feel like my fingers are going to chip off the PS3 controllers.
Well, yeah, the PS3, you know, like the R2, L2 buttons, that's poor, poor design choice. But I like the analog sticks. Like, they feel comfortable. They're not digging into my thumb. It's good.
Yeah, the PS3 controller is pretty standard control design, so it works out pretty well.
Yeah. The other thing, and I thought this was just going to mention, is that, and there are ways to work around it, but I do kind of miss the second analog stick, mostly as far as it relates to camera control, I mean, some games, if they were designed around it, they worked well, but, you know, like, they always found some, like, Mario used the D-pad, I think Skyward Sword, you had to hold down a button and move the remote, so, you know, there was Xenoblade was another one where... Xenoblade was another one where you had, like, no matter which control scheme you used for that, it was really odd because you ended up missing something with the Wii U, which is how I played it. You ended up controlling the camera by holding down C, and then you had to rotate this. So there was no real easy and uniform way to control the camera in any of these games.
Yeah, I agree.
And that was the other big thing. Other than that, I think it's the most comfortable controller this generation. I know people disagree with that. But, I mean, between the fact that you can relax with it since you didn't have to hold your hand in a certain position, and the fact that I thought the Wiimote and the Nunchuck really fit in your hands well.
Yeah, they were definitely contoured properly for use.
Yeah, as long as people stuck with A, B, and a D-pad, once you start using the 1 and 2 and the plus and minus buttons, then your hands were kind of doing these things that they probably shouldn't be doing because there was no real way to reach those.
That's true. And for the games where, you know, you just use the Wii remote, like New Super Mario Brothers or Kirby Epic Yarn, and you're holding it sideways, after long periods of time, that can get a little taxing. Like, it's a little crampy. But if you're using the Nunchuck with the Wii remote, yeah, I have no problems with that at all.
That's the Wii controller, I guess. I mean, since we're on that subject, and that is the big... We mentioned the design and how it felt, but what about the actual motion controls, the big hook of the controller, even the big hook of the system?
Yeah, okay, well, go on.
It definitely varied from game to game. A lot of games did not use it well, especially early on. Like, it was more about the pointing controls. The pointing controls always seemed to take precedence over the motion controls, which always seemed kind of a last-minute addition to any game.
Yeah, and, like, my first experience with it, like, almost anybody, it was Wii Sports with the motion stuff. And, you know, at the time, before Wii Motion Plus came out, we didn't really know any better and how much fidelity you can get with the motion stuff. So, you know, I pretty much enjoyed, you know, golfing and bowling and things like that. I thought that was kind of neat, even though you could, you know, severely make it into your own by just flicking of the wrist and making, like, a perfect bowl. And then, like, WarioWare came out, and that was also an excellent, excellent use for motion stuff. But then you had stuff like Red Steel and, you know, other games that made motion very taxing and terrible, and then even Nintendo later on started to do it with all the motion stuff, and you only had, like, Mario Galaxy with a wiggle or things like that.
But before we continue, Jason has finally joined us.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome.
A bit late to the party, but okay.
I was celebrating the Wii retrospective by playing Halo.
Yes, because that was the one genre that the Wii dominated in was first.
You mean
shooters.
Metroid Prime 4.
But, yeah, I mean, I think that's a problem with any system. I think the Wii was one, you know, like, motion controls is a new beast altogether, so it got a lot more feedback when motion controls failed. But there are games on other systems that the controls are still wonky. It's just that you kind of associate that more with game design than the actual controls. Early on, a lot of people were just like, you know what, instead of like one of the first examples, one of the first games I played for the Wii was the TMNT game that came out after the movie. And what they did there is instead of like pressing A for beat 'em up, you just waggle the controller, and that made no sense, and that was more taxing. There's no rhyme or reason to it, and it's just like waggle, waggle, waggle. And I'm like, at this point, I'm button mashing. I can just press A and B and stuff like that. And those type of experiences where you just took a normal control scheme or a normal game design, and you're like, you know what, we'll just put waggle because this is what people want, weren't the ones that really showed off the potential of the system. And in many ways, were kind of the things that painted it early on as like motion controls didn't work. Then you had, on the other end of the spectrum, you had Wii Sports, which, you know, you already mentioned was a phenomenal game in that regard. You mentioned WarioWare as well, which is another game, and I'm so mad I missed that on my top seven Wii Motion games. But I think, you know, one that really goes under the radar for that same idea was Rayman Raven Rabbids, which had you...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because it used it the same way that Wii Sports and WarioWare did, but those games were a lot more meaty. Those games were a lot more, you know, game oriented. So you know, it used both controllers at the same time. WarioWare, I believe, though, you used the Wiimote, and except for Wii Boxing, everything else used the Wiimote. This used both of them, and you know, like. But there's a very bad game that I always made my friends play because I always made it like you were jacking off. There's a carrot pumping game in Rayman Raven Rabbids where with one hand you have to shake the nunchuck really hard, and the other hand you kind of spray the screen with the Wiimote, and that uses motion and IR aiming at the same time. And again, it's an idea that couldn't be done on any other system that was done well, that made for a fun and interesting project. And, I mean, the Rayman series continued through, I mean, the Rabbids series, because they dropped the Rayman brand in after the first game, continued throughout, but most people never picked up on those subtle improvements that they could have added to their games with the controller.
Yeah, like, you have those gems that you mentioned, and then, unfortunately, a lot of motion stuff was very uninspired in the later years. Like just, you know, instead of motion controls, waggle controls is basically what everybody resorted to. Even, you know, kind of Twilight Princess, before they sort of honed their skills with Skyward Sword. Twilight Princess was very much just waggle the controller to attack. So.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll get to that in a bit when we talk about the games. I think Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword kind of being the beginning and the end of the Wii, respectively. I mean, granted, the Wii was on the market a year after Skyward Sword, but we can all kind of agree it's been dead this year for the most part. I think it's a great bookmark to the legacy of the Wii, just to see the evolution of actually what the system was capable of in this genre and in this game that came out 5 years after the system had matured, and the technology was in a place where Nintendo needed it to be. But yeah, I mean, let's have Jason in. What were your thoughts on motion controls in the Wii controller?
Well, I remember going back to when they first announced it, and I just thought it was the most, like, incredible, like, it was such a bold step, you know? Like, it was really, I mean, they already had kind of done that with the DS, you know, going two screens and touch controls and stuff, but to completely reapproach the way you interact with their console. I mean, obviously it goes without saying that it pretty much kept their business afloat after struggling with the GameCube to directly compete with Microsoft and Sony's bank account. And it was a shrewd business move, and it totally, I mean, there's been more failures than successes, I think, with the motion controls, but it still kick-started this new era of I don't know, just looking at consoles a different way. And obviously it was very successful because now we have Move and Kinect and, you know, all the next, even the Vita has a gyroscope in it, the 3DS has a gyroscope in it, like all the iDevices have gyroscopes in them. So, you know, its legacy is very clear.
Yeah, like, say what you want about Nintendo, but they've always been innovators, you know, ever since, you know, Rumble Pak and things like that. They've always innovated on how to play the games rather than these are the best graphics or whatnot.
I mean, that's. I think that's something we'll get to in a second as far as system power goes. But yeah, it was a bold move for them.
I will say that I don't know, now with the caveat of having not played Skyward Sword yet, which could fill this category, I don't know that its full potential was ever realized.
And that's a good
You have to play Skyward Sword.
I know. I said that's a pretty big caveat, yeah. But
I think even before Skyward Sword, something like Red Steel 2 was also shown the full potential of the system. But I will say this much, and I kind of agree with Jason, is that you're looking at games that came out 4 or 5 years into the system's lifespan, when Nintendo should have been at the forefront of that from day one, kind of trying to have that game that was like, this is what the Wii is. And then to some degrees, you had that with Wii Sports, but that's what kind of started that movement towards where people, you know, the casual gamers movement.
Right, we wanted the, like, quote-unquote hardcore Wii game.
Yeah.
That was just as complex as any game with a traditional gamepad that incorporated motion controls, like, intuitively and engagingly.
And the problem with that is that while we had good, like, there were decent launch games that kind of did that, a lot of them were bad games, and what people took from that was not that they were bad games, but that they were bad games because of motion. Stuff like Red Steel was a bad FPS because the cursor was jittery, not because it was a poorly coded game that was done in 6 months. Something like Far Cry, I forget which Far Cry it was on the Wii.
That was just a horrible game altogether.
Yeah, but again, it was blamed on the fact that it was on the Wii, the lack of technology and the controller were the reason for stuff like that. And, you know, early on, we had a lot of ports of games that were weren't up to snuff. I mean, this was a bit later on in the lifespan, but I guess that one of the prime examples was Dead Rising, Chop Till You Drop, where, like, you know, like the big thing with the 360 version was having so many things on screen. It comes to the Wii, and there's, like, 5 zombies on screen, and you can't do half the things you can do in the 360 version. So people are like, you know what, these types of games just don't work on the system. But we know that Wii Sports works. We know that what was the other one? There was Wii Sports, there was Deca Sports, there was Carnival Games, there was Rayman. These were all the multi-million selling games, so we'll just continue on that road. Because, one, we already have the model for that, because Nintendo led the way with Wii Sports. And we know they sell because Deca Sports sold, Carnival Games sold, Rayman sold. So we'll just kind of keep on pounding that market.
Yeah, I mean, when I got a launch system, it was Elebits, Zelda, and Excitrux, and of those, Elebits was the only one that actually used the controls in a good way. And it's just a shame more people didn't really try to experience that game because it just looked too kiddie, or I suppose it had too many colors. But it was actually a lot of fun because it actually used the motion controls to, like, completely interact with your environment. And it wasn't just the pointer controls, but it was everything about the controller.
Yeah, and there are a lot of games, I think, a lot of the tinier games, the small niche games, that kind of showcase the Wii's potential that people kind of ignored. I mean, you mentioned Elebits, which was an okay. It wasn't very, it's not a first-person shoot. It's like a first-person adventure game, I guess.
First-person kind of puzzle adventure, yeah.
And that was there. Excitrux, which I mentioned, is a I think Excitrux is a phenomenal little franchise that people ignore, especially once they get Excitebots and it goes completely batshit insane. What else was there? I'm actually a fan of Tony Hawk Downhill Jam. I don't think a lot of people actually play that one. But I actually think it's a ton of fun, and that was the other thing that came out early on with the Wii. It's because this wasn't a complex controller, and this wasn't, you know, a hardcore system. You put everything on rails. Tony Hawk was on rails. Sonic was on rails.
Sonic. The first Sonic was okay, though. I mean, it wasn't too bad. Secret Rings.
I enjoy
Secret Rings. I actually think that the idea of the Sonic Storybook franchise was novel, and I think, you know, they could have
continued. Get it?
I was hoping nobody picked it up because I said it afterwards. I'm like, crap, that's a terrible pun. And it wasn't intentional, but yeah. Because they later on they did Sonic and the Black Knight, and that kind of got mixed reactions.
Because the human on Hedgehog loving.
No, that was Sonic 06.
Sonic, that was 06? Okay, yeah.
Now, Sonic and the Black Knight was the game that IGN reviewed, because apparently what happens with the game is, like, it ends, and then it kind of starts again with, like, some, you know, like, the credits roll, and then something happens afterwards. And I remember, IGN reviewed the game where in the first credits rolled, and people were like, this game isn't, like, 2 hours long. It's, like, a whole new quest after that. And I remember there was people up in arms about that. I actually never played it. I think the idea of giving Sonic a sword was stupid, but he's done a lot worse this generation. What can you say?
Who didn't like the Werehog? Come on.
Resident Evil became a rail shooter.
Two rail shooters.
We had a bunch of rail shooters collections at House of the Dead, 2 and 3.
But House of the Dead was supposed to be a rail shooter.
Extraction, I think, on the Wii with the rail shooter.
Overkill did the rail shooter perfectly, though.
I'm a huge fan of rail shooters. I think that, you know, I think the Instant and Punishment is also up there as well. But the thing it was that people just assumed that the games had to be on rail. And it's the same thing with Kinect, is you put a game on rails because you can't give people direct controls over their stuff. So that's kind of what happened. I'm trying to think of other major third-party games within the first year of the system, and I'm drawing like a major blank in my head.
There was SSX Blur, which is actually a really good game that a lot of people passed over because they didn't think that they could get the controls, which I found they worked perfectly, but apparently only 50% did, so...
And it's kind of, because it wasn't a full game, it was kind of like remixes from like 3 and Tricky, I think.
Right.
So people were also turned off by that, because I remember when SSX was announced for this year, we're like, oh, fine. I'm like, yeah, but we had one this generation. It's not EA's fault you was on the system, you didn't want to support or anything. I mean, there was Resident Evil port, and I honestly can't think of anything else third parties did in that first year that stood out.
Not from the major ones. I mean, we got a lot of fairly good niche games, like No More Heroes came out in the first 2 years, and then
later on, you kind of, you know, you open it up with No More Heroes, Mad World, you know, Monster Hunter Tri and stuff like that. Eventually, third party started to kind of cater to the game, but by that point, most people had kind of abandoned ship.
Yeah.
So there was that, but yeah, I mean, there was a lot of potential in there. And, you know, it never really amounted to much until the end days of the system, when even Nintendo was kind of shaky at first. I mean, I think one of the biggest parts of the Wii's legacy, and the part that people will kind of always remember, is that from, I think, early 08 until maybe mid 09, there was just a lack of really good first-party titles for the system.
It was Animal Crossing, and that was it, yep.
Like, the first,
that was the period where I sold my Wii, I think.
That's the
a lot of people did that, yep.
A lot of people kind of abandoned ship, because the first year and a half was phenomenal for Nintendo. Skyward Sword, Wii Sports, WarioWare, Super Paper Mario, Super Mario Galaxy, Metroid Prime 3, Mario Kart, Super Brothers Brawl. First year and a half. The
golden years, yeah.
The next you get...
Animal Crossing. That was basically their biggest release in that entire period.
Yeah, and that was when people were like, you know what, we're not going to do this. And I don't fault people for it. I mean, lucky enough for me, I had a 360 and I bought a PS3 that year. Because, you know, 360, I think 08 was Gears of War 2. It was, God knows what else. It was probably a big year for them. PS3 I got Uncharted. I think Uncharted 2 wasn't too far off and stuff like that. But yeah, that was the time, and that's the period of time I think where Nintendo also out of people. And I think Nintendo's thinking, and this is kind of what they tried to do with the 3DS, is that their thinking was, like, built up the year and a half lead, we have this huge install base, we have these clear games, we're going to open it up for third parties to finally shine, because the narrative was always third party games don't sell Nintendo systems. So you give them a window where there's no Mario to compete with, there's no Zelda to compete with, there's no Metroid to compete with, and nobody does anything with it. And then it's like Nintendo caught with their pants down, because their big holiday title was Wii Music and Animal Crossing for 08. And then after that, I think they did decently from 09 through 2010, and then they've kind of...
Yeah, once they hit that second wave where they had Mario Galaxy 2 and New Super Mario Brothers and...
Donkey Kong.
Other M, Donkey Kong.
GoldenEye.
Sin and Punishment.
Sin and Punishment. Yeah, they had their groove. The problem was they had to go through a year of... And you don't have a system in the peak of its life with a year with no major releases.
Yeah.
I don't care who you are, it just doesn't work that way. And it was a time when third parties also abandoned them, because you had games like No More Heroes come out that didn't do too well. You had games like Mad World come out that didn't do too well. You had games like The Conduit that came out that didn't do too well.
Well, didn't do too well in the grand scheme of things. For what they were, they actually did phenomenally, but...
Yeah, the problem was that a lot of people hung their hats on these games doing phenomenal, because that, you know, and you know, there was always narrative like No More Heroes is going to be the first hardcore Wii game that, you know, Wii game should look forward to. It sells like 200,000, which is phenomenal for Suda 51, but if you're Activision, if you're Ubisoft, if you're EA, that's not going to sway you. 2000's nothing.
Right.
I mean, granted, that based on NPDs this week, they would hope for that for Medal of Honor at this point. But but yeah, so Mad World comes out and sells like 50,000. That's not going to give you faith. Even games that sell well, Resident Evil 4 sold 1.5 million. Resident Evil, I want to say Darkseid Chronicles, is that the first one?
No, that was the second one. The first one was
Umbrella.
Yeah, Umbrella Chronicles. Yeah.
Sells 1 million copies. Darkseid Chronicles comes out and sells like 100,000. So the market was dying off because people were kind of feeding these games that nobody wanted, and then using that to say that there's no market for it. Because in that time, what Capcom had Spyborgs, they had Chop to You Drop, they had...
I think, too, like, as the generation went on, the inability for the Wii to like even display in like 480 or like in HD, I mean, became more and more of an issue. You know, because in 2006 it was like, you know, 30% of households had HDTVs or something like that. So like, it was still a new thing. It wasn't as big of a deal. But once we get more years and years into the and we become accustomed to these glorious HD visuals, and then playing a Wii, like, you know, yeah. It offers a motion controller, but the novelty was kind of wearing off. It wasn't, at least, especially pre-Motion Plus, its potential wasn't really, and especially for the third parties, wasn't really being realized as well as we hoped. And, you know, it was like, visually, it was like taking a step back in time. So,
yeah.
I think those things all conspired to, like, work against the Wii.
The first party Nintendo stuff did really well in utilizing, you know, their faults with SD and making really nice visuals, just like on an animation standpoint, like Galaxy and Skyward Sword looked very nice for games that weren't HD.
Yeah, and I think I agree with Jason to a degree. I think that at some point it just got to a point where the technology was too far away for them to even bother like, downgrading it to Wii. But and a lot of people just hedged these bets on this before the start of the generation. A lot of people just assumed that we were coming off of the phenomenal PlayStation 2 sales, that Sony would come in and steamroll the competition, so you kind of hedged your bet on the PS3. And the 360 was kind of like a fallback guy because it had that year and they had some new technologies. The problem is, I mean, not the problem, but what I think was the issue is that people should have invested early on so they could have built on that. Like, Capcom had the Resident Evil 4 engine on the Wii. EA had the Medal of Honor engine. They had the Godfather engine. Ubisoft had the Prince of Persia engine and stuff like that. So you could have taken those engines and not necessarily give... Like, you wouldn't get Assassin's Creed on the Wii, but you could have got an Assassin's Creed spinoff, because they do... I mean, they've done a DS spinoff, or at least I think they did. I don't know if that was canceled. They've done a PlayStation Vita version of Assassin's Creed, so you could have done a mini version of Assassin's Creed built on the Prince of Persia engine that they did for the Wii, the same way that Assassin's Creed is built on the Prince of Persia engine that they did for the HD systems. You could have made a Resident Evil side story that wasn't a rail shooter based on the Resident Evil 4 engine. You could have built first-person shooters built on the Medal of Honor engine. Again, and you don't have to invest as much because you already kind of laid the groundwork there, and it would have given you a chance to expand your brand by having these kind of, like, additional games in these franchises. Now, where that can falter is where we also got early on, where a lot of third parties were like, we'll put popular brands on the Wii, but we won't put them in where you expect. So we got Soul Calibur Legends, which was a third-person beat-em-up.
And then we got Castlevania
Judgment,
which was a fighter.
You got the two Resident Evil rail shooters. You got Dead Space Extraction, which was a rail shooter. So yeah, you ended up with a lot of these games where it's like, oh, we'll use these IPs, people will buy them because they don't know any better, and we'll put them in these genres that don't necessarily play to their strengths. I mean, I think the idea of a Castlevania fight is kind of cool, but they just didn't really execute it well.
Same thing with the Soul Calibur action game.
Yeah. It's a Soul Calibur action game, which I sadly enough do own because I do like beat-em-ups. It wasn't so much that it was a bad, well, it is a bad game, but I also think it's another one of those games where it's like, oh, we'll just kind of have waggle for your moves instead of like A and B is your actual primary moves, and we'll use motion controls for little things. A great example would be compare that to No More Heroes, which is kind of a beat 'em up. It uses A for attacks and B's for kicks and stuff, but it uses how you hold the remote as a way to kind of change up your combos. It's a simple addition, but it adds to the game. It's something unique for the Wii, and it doesn't really make it feel like this is just a replacement for something else I could have done with a button. So, yeah. I guess that's the intro of the Wii's and its legacy and stuff like that. We talked about games that weren't too impressive and stuff like that. What were some of your, I guess, favorite games on the system?
Well, besides the obvious, like the Mario games and Xenoblade, which everyone raves about, I really have to say that No More Heroes came out as my favorite new franchise from this generation period. It was just such a well-crafted universe where, like, anything was possible, even if it was supposed to be realistic in a sense, and it just blew me away the first time playing through both games, and I just loved every minute of it.
Okay. No More Heroes is such an interesting game to me. I like No More Heroes. I just think that it needs to kind of be tightened up a lot for next generation, because it's...
I agree. And, yeah, I love Suda51. I love him. But for some reason, I cannot get into most of his games. Like, I really enjoy Shadows of the Damned. But I have both No More Heroes for the Wii. I haven't played the second one yet, and I'm, like, halfway through the first one. But for some reason, I couldn't get into Killer 7, couldn't really get into No More Heroes, but regardless of all that, I still love Suda51's energy that he puts into his games.
To me, he has great ideas, he has, you know, great... It's just, he's really pissed on the executions. No More Heroes, I have Travis Touchdown, he's a phenomenal protagonist. The world is interesting, the story's fun. Even the gameplay's okay, it's just that the gameplay never really evolves throughout the course of the game. So you're kind of doing the same thing you did at Hour 1 that you do in Hour 7 and 8. And by that point, it's just like, I need something new, and it's like, even what he does have this, Joe's still kind of rough around the edges. And granted, I know that part of the reason his games are like this is because they aren't made on a huge budget, which is why they continue this. No, they don't have to sell mega numbers to do well, but if he just, you know, it's like No More Heroes 2 is the same way Shadow of the Damned. It's like he's almost there. You just kind of need to give him that extra push to really polish up these games. What about you, Phil? What was your favorite game then?
So my favorite games for the Wii, Super Mario Galaxy, I think, was one of the best games of this generation by far. Trauma Team. I love Trauma Team. That game is phenomenal. I love the story. I love, you know, switching back and forth between, like, I think it's 5 or 6 different characters, and they all have different gameplay stuff. And I played it once through by myself and once with co-op, and it's a very fun co-op. And it kind of, it's like, you know, the Trauma Center series mixed in with, like, Phoenix Wright, because there's, like, detective stuff into it, and I thought that was awesome. Also, Rhythm Heaven Fever is one of my favorite games for the Wii as well. It will be a top contender for my game of the year this this year as well. It'll be in the top three, regardless. Yeah, love Rhythm Heaven Fever to death. Yeah, Galaxy, Trauma Team, Rhythm Heaven Fever. I think those are my favorite games of the week.
Okay. Actually, you mentioned Trauma Center, and that was actually a good one, too. Trauma Center, Trauma Team were actually games that... Trauma Center was a DS port, came out within the first year of the Wii, and that was another one that used the Wiimote. I mean, I basically used the Wiimote like the stars on the DS.
Yeah.
So that wasn't so bad. That was a fun little game.
And we mentioned WarioWare before. That's very fun. Super Mario as well. But like, I played the game again, and I didn't have as fun as a time as I had playing it first time. Like, now I'm like thinking back to Thousand Year Door and how much better that was. But when I first played Super Paper Mario, that game was also a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think Super Paper Mario is okay. I think the problem with Super Paper Mario for me is with expectations. In an RPG, I go and expect a lot of talking. In a platformer, I don't. So when they kind of switched the balance where it's more of a platformer than it is an RPG, the fact that it was so talky just kind of got on my nerves after a while. It also helped. It also helped that I liked the cast of characters, but they didn't have the side characters who I thought made the original Paper Mario. Like, you had, you know, like Count Peek, and you had Mr. L, which is not my favorite interpretation of Luigi. But other than that, it was mostly just these what pixels, and they didn't really add. They didn't really add much, so.
Yeah, it was kind of bland. The world looked kind of bland. Like, it was just, it wasn't as vivid and colorful, like, you know, Thousand Year Door and the Paper Mario for the 64. And, yeah, it was bland is the word that I would use for that. Also, Little King's Story was pretty good. After a certain point, it got ridiculous, though, like, hard.
It was never that easy of a game. It just kind of, you really had to focus on what you were doing at all times during battles and stuff. And it made even worse by having actual consequences where you actually felt bad for killing people off.
Well, I mean, just to switch focus before we get Jason and my games and stuff like that, I think Little King's Story is a great point that we haven't mentioned yet, is that one of the things with the Wii was it lacked power. So for a lot of studios, that meant that you couldn't really compete on a visual standard unless you changed the rules. And what that meant is that you had a lot of fun and creative art styles come out on this system.
Well, I think the best games took that and ran with it, but not everyone did that.
Not everybody did that, but some. I mean, like, Little King's Story stands out because it has that very water plane and dip to it. Kirby's Epic Yarn, which I personally as the best second game of this generation. Yep. And most people won't agree with me on it, but you had No More Heroes that cel shaded polygon you look to it. Skyward Sword has that painted look to it. The Galaxy games actually do go for I don't want to say realistic, it's a Mario game, but they do kind of go for polygonal looks, but what they do is they kind of go for a minimalistic look so that you can have more details and stuff. Mad World went with the black and white stuff.
Which a lot of people hated, but I actually really, really dug that look.
It kind of gets old fast. I understand what they were going for, and I think it works to a degree, but it's not something that can sustain an entire game, because it needed a bit more color to it, except for black, white, and red.
It's a novel idea, you know, you like it when people have these different art styles, but after a while, it was kind of hard on your eyes a little bit. Same reason why what I had a problem with Retro City Rampage was, you know, it's awesome, the old school pixel art, but then after a while it's like, you know, I can't really make out what the hell's going on screen, but
Yeah, and we kind of had that with the retro revival, but that's another subject for another day. But yeah, a lot of interesting art styles came out. And, you know, we've mentioned Kirby's Epic Yarn, which I still think is... Kirby's Epic Yarn, not only went with it, they kind of, like, you know, they did a Hail Mary pass and just said, the hell with it, we'll just do the entire game there. It's not just that it has this yarn feel to it. It's actually like the game world is constructed by yarn. Stuff moves as if it's actually being touched and, you know, felt up by Kirby and stuff like that. He unravels stuff and enemies, and it's so adorable. But it's, you know, it's the idea that... And, you know, when people say this now, a lot of people are just like, it's a Wii apologist attitude. But a lot of things came out this generation where we started separating graphics from a technical component, something like Battlefield 3, which is technically sound, to something that's artistically sound, like Kirby's Epic Yarn. I mean, granted, the best games are still the ones that can kind of marry those two concepts well. I think the Halo franchise does a phenomenal job with that. But, yeah, we had, I'm trying to think of early games that we had that did this.
Kind of Elebits, going back to that, and Excitetruck both kind of went kind of weird directions while trying to be realistic, but also having their own unique style to them.
Well, Excitetruck, I think, went realistic. It was just really, the Wii couldn't really
do
much.
It was kind of a hyper-realistic, where it was, like, crazy.
Compare it to what they would eventually do with ExciteBots, and then, you know, we're just going insane here. And yeah, you can kind of see the evolution in that. So I would say Paper Mario, but at this point, the Paper Mario series has its distinct style. Metroid's an interesting beast because Retro just has phenomenal artists. So they go for not a realistic look, it has aliens and stuff like that, but, you know, it goes for a real normal game, but Retro has such a phenomenal art team that it just looks phenomenal. And that's going to be the word of this show, apparently.
Phenomenal?
Yeah, I've said it way too much. and stuff like that. I mean, even Mario Kart kind of had like that. Mario Kart was a bit different because Nintendo always kind of prefers having 60 frames per second in that game, so it's never a graphical showcase. It gets the job done, but it's never anything special. And I think Mario Kart Wii was pretty much the same deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with
Mario
Kart graphical
Wii.
Power.
Yeah, and I mean, there are games like Monster Hunter Tri, I think, is a great game that uses, you know, it goes for a realistic environment or realistic people and stuff like that, and does it well. Xenoblade has phenomenal scale. Good, it's that word again. And Xenoblade makes up for it with some terrible textures and awful facial models, though.
But that had such a huge world that was to be expected. I mean, on that kind of system, when you have such a gigantic environment, you have to sacrifice certain things.
Yeah. Yeah, it's what they had to do. I mean, I will hold that up as one of my favorite games of this generation. But it does have a lot of visual shortcuts that you already notice in the cutscenes and stuff like that. Skyward Sword's another great example of that, where Skyward Sword's art style is the Uma Thurman of video games for me. Sometimes it's great looking, sometimes it's a mess. But when it's really good looking, it's really good looking.
That is an interesting way to put things.
Yeah, great analogy.
Well, I mean, have you seen Uma Thurman? Like, some movies, it's like, yeah, Uma Thurman. Some movies, like, really, Uma Thurman? And she's just a really mixed bag for me, but that's another topic for another day. So, yeah, visual styles. And the other thing that you've mentioned, and I don't know how my brain works that I got disconnected when you mentioned Super Paper Mario, was that do you think that Nintendo abandoned the hardcore base throughout this generation?
For about a year and a half, they did. there was a very clear shift in where their focus was going, and then they saw that that was not going to work, so they shifted the exact opposite way from there.
Yeah, and their marketing went from, you know, catering to people who don't play games and stuff like that. But, yeah, I think they're coming back in a really big way. And I don't, I think, wanted to alienate the hardcore audience ever. They just wanted to make more money and get more people into video games. But
yeah, I think they got, like, really excited that they were bringing in all these new people and these, like, casual games or whatever. And then, you know, you get further in the generation, you realize the people that buy lots and lots of software are, like, the hardcore people. You know, like, my parents have literally gotten a Wii with Wii Sports and Wii Fit. And those are the only games they've ever bought for their Wii. So, and I know there's plenty of people like that. And that just, you know, the people who, the customers who are going to keep breathing life into their console and buy more games are the ones who play a lot.
Well, I mean, and this is, again, a different subject. But, I mean, you can say the same thing for any audience. I mean, there are people who just buy Call of Duty every year. There's people who just buy Madden every year. I mean, there are going to be those people who only have the type of games they want. Like, I'm sure there's people that can go and their library is probably like Wii Sports.
Right, but those systems aren't dependent on just Madden and Call of Duty.
No.
Whereas for a stretch, the Wii was just dependent on casual titles and mini games and stuff like that.
I think that's two different points, though, because was it dependent because that was Nintendo's output, or was it dependent because there was nobody else was making those games that catered to the other side of the audience? The reason why Xbox and PS3 wouldn't be dependent on Madden and Call of Duty is because you still have third parties making games that would cater to people outside of that spectrum. Well,
and first parties.
Yeah,
like, those two are both third-party games, so...
It's kind of a stretch, because, like, one of the things, and we mentioned this on a normal episode before, Microsoft has done a piss-poor job of being a first-party the last 2 years.
Well, forever. They've never been a good first-party. They've cut breaks. That's about it.
Yeah, but they were better at the start of the generation, because, I mean, they published Lost Odyssey, they published Gears of
War. Well, they published a lot of third-party games, so it's not really first-party. I mean, it was first-party published, but...
Well, the way I see it is that Microsoft has to date, this is November 10th, I believe, as of recording, Microsoft has published 3 first-party titles this year so far. Star Wars Kinect, Fable the Journey, Forza Horizons, and Halo 4. Of those 4 titles, I think only 2 of them are people consider quote-unquote hardcore games. And if you were to take the gap between when they asked hardcore game last year and their first hardcore game this year, it's been a year since they published a title. But you don't say that Microsoft abandoned the hardcore gamers because you have EA, Ubisoft, Activision, all of these people filling in the gaps. So, I mean... Well, basically what I'm trying to get at is, like, I don't think Nintendo itself abandoned the hardcore gamers. I think Nintendo kind of stretched themselves too thin and did too much too fast. Like we mentioned before, in the first year and a half of the system's lifespan, they had an entry in almost all of their major franchises. Yes, you can point out that they didn't do Star Fox, they didn't do F-Zero, they didn't do this, they didn't do that. But they had Mario, they had Zelda, they had Metroid, they had Smash Bros., they had Mario Kart. They had 2 Mario spinoffs. They had a Zelda spinoff in that time, actually. And they had a lot of these games. And then it was that gap where it's like, now we wait, because they ran out of big franchises to do, which is why you saw the resurgence later on with 2 more Mario games, a Donkey Kong game, another Metroid, another Zelda game. But in between that gap, they didn't have anything they could have put out there that would have really swayed people. And you can't really stretch it out too much, because then it becomes an issue of, like, why are we waiting 2 years to get Smash Bros.? Why are we waiting 3 years to get Mario Kart? I do agree with people that there was that time, that year, where there was, like, nothing coming out from them, and that turned people off. But I think this notion that they consciously decided that we're going to ignore a segment of this our audience just because we want to make money with these other people seems kind of backwards to me. I think they could have done a better job of handling their releases, schedules, and trying to get third parties on board early on. Because at that point, a year and a half, 2 years in, it's like, if you didn't have third parties who were signing up, Nintendo should have actively been going out seeking them and trying to get them on board to do something. And we see that with the Wii U, where they seem to be doing it ahead of time. They got, you know, they're publishing Ninja Gaiden, they've gotten exclusive content for Tekken Tag Tournament, they're publishing Lego City Undercovers, and they're publishing two Platinum games. So they're going out there and they're seeking, you know, like, we can't do this all on our own anymore. We need people. We're going to go out and we're going to recruit you early on. But at no point, as far as I know, did they do that or attempt that with the Wii.
Not until Capcom and Monster Hunter, then with Square Enix and Dragon Quest. But yeah, early on they definitely did not do that.
Yeah, and even if, you know, again, you don't necessarily, like, it would help if you had the big ones, but they also could have shown support to the little developers that was helping them. Because, you know, like, there were people out there, like the people behind Elyabits, who was Konami, I believe. They were out there doing that. There was the Zack and Wiki. They didn't really offer any support for that type. That game came out, and granted, that game probably wouldn't have sold well on anything, but they could have given it some type of support. Another game I think that's really underrated on the Wii, Deji Creatures, which is an interesting action game that we don't see many of, the Blob, stuff like that. So yeah, I think, I don't believe in this notion that Nintendo abandoned the hardcore games. I think, one, I think it's a silly notion to say that a company has abandoned you or not, unless they completely close up shop. I think what Nintendo's failings was that they never active, they weren't as aggressive as they should have been, and at no point did they really say that we needed to turn this around. Because I assume they see their schedule and they can see this huge gap coming. And I'm sure nobody in that company honestly thought that Animal Crossing would have been enough to carry them for a year.
When they first came out with WiiWare, for a little while, WiiWare was pretty good. And they put some good smaller indie hits on there. And at the time, it was relatively new. I believe Microsoft had a head start with the Xbox Live Arcade and putting out Geometry Wars and stuff like that. You know, you had World of Goo. What came out early in the WiiWare's life? In any case, yeah, I remember WiiWare being pretty good in the early stages as well.
I guess we can talk about their virtual console and the WiiWare. The problem with the WiiWare, to me, is that Nintendo itself never really took it seriously. As far as I know, Nintendo has never created a game for WiiWare. They published games. They had Dr. Mario, they have Fluidity, and stuff like that. They never actually created a game for WiiWare.
Fluidity. I know.
That was
Miyamoto's own game, yes.
Okay, I thought it was another, because it's not made by a Nintendo internal studio. It's made by Curve Studios.
No, but it was Miyamoto's kind of brainchild. I know he had a big role in it, so I don't know if you can count it as a Nintendo game, but it is technically a Nintendo game.
Well, I mean, it's a Nintendo game. They publish it, but I mean, I thought it wasn't a game that they themselves created. It was another studio that came to them with the idea. But yeah, and the thing with that is, like, without them supporting it, it also meant that they never really actually advertised it. Compare that to something like the 3DS, where they active. I mean, how many Nintendo Directs have we had so far that have been focused on the 3DS eShop so far? We've had, like, two in the last month that was focused solely on this, and the new Super Mario 2's DLC, and the stuff that's coming out. So they have changed their stance on that, but throughout the course of the Wii, they really didn't do anything like that. The biggest game, I think, was Pokemon Rumble, which they advertised, and that was like 2 years later on, and that was a really bad game. Well, it wasn't bad. It was just really mundane.
It was a Pokemon spinoff. It wasn't a dungeon game, so yeah.
It was a beat-em-up where you had one move. So yeah. And they had the virtual console, which I think was early on was a huge part of the system. I think it's a huge part of the system still, even if they kind of, and they did a decent enough job with that early on, but I think the problem then became is, like, people went on your downloadable service and bought your older games, and nobody was looking at the new stuff that was coming out for it.
Yeah, I think that was a great idea when they added Virtual Console stuff, because I bought a lot of old... I have, like, a whole SD card full of old games that I bought from that service.
Lost
Winds. Lost Winds came out. That was a good WiiWare title.
Yeah, two of them came out, but you're supposed to do five, but I don't think the series ever picked up enough.
Yeah, and that's another thing. It's like they didn't really offer support to these in the developers. And from what we learned later on, they also had some odd requirements. The 40 megabyte limit was a huge one. That kind of, something like Super Meat Boy, which was originally a WiiWare title, never made it out to the system. Retro City Rampage, which started off as a WiiWare title, never made it out to the system. And stuff like that. Then there was the fact that you had a sales threshold where you had to sell a certain amount before you even saw a dime of it. And for a lot of people, they didn't make that threshold, so they didn't make money and they stopped supporting the system. And even going forward, there are people who are still bitter about that as far as the 3DS eShop. And I assume we were on the Wii U goes. So they, again, that's another aspect where they fell short on. And I guess since we're talking about this, we might as well talk about the other area we didn't talk about when they fall short of, and that was online gaming.
Yeah,
it was
lack of online gaming.
Yeah, there was not much to talk about. Even outside of Mario Kart, most of them had horrible netcode, like Super Smash Brothers. You'd try and join a game, and it would tell you that the other person was not online, and just It was a complete mess, even discounting friend codes.
Yeah, and the thing is, and this is what drove me nuts, is that they never had a uniform system for their games. And I don't mean that, friendships and stuff like that. I just meant, features from one game would never be in, Mario Kart had the pre-chat system where you're in a chat room, you had to predefined messages, you could share with your friends and stuff like that. I don't think that was in any of their other games. It might have been in Smash Brothers to a certain degree.
Yeah, that was in Smash Brothers.
That if you had to compare Nintendo's output from 2006, so let's say end of 2008 versus 2009 till the end of the Wii, which half of their output would you prefer and why?
Definitely the
first
half.
Oh my god, wow. It's tough. I'm going to have to say the first half as well, though. Just because, Wii Sports was awesome when that came out. That was like hours and hours of fun showing your friends, showing your family. Super Mario Galaxy, still one of my best games of this generation. But we did have Skyward Sword and Rhythm Heaven. It's tough, but yeah, I'll go with the first half.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the games they put out, in the past couple of years have been just insanely good. Xenoblade and Skyward Sword and Last Story and Rhythm Heaven, but the amount and quality of the games for the first half with Galaxy and Smash Brothers and just Metroid Prime 3, that's what you expect from a company like Nintendo to be coming out on their console pretty much all the time. So, I mean, there's a way to combine them both. That would be how you would run it. And I think going forward, Nintendo's going to try and do that, but we'll see.
We will always see when it comes to Nintendo. I am actually going to go with the other half of their output. I think the first half is fantastic, but like I said, I think they were a lot more experimental with the second half. Stuff like Xenoblade and the Last Story. We got sequels that, for the most part, surpassed their original counterparts. I think Skyward Sword is better than Twilight Princess. I think Galaxy 2 is a overall better game than Galaxy 1, even though I think Galaxy 1 gets the nod for being more innovative. New Super Mario Bros. Wii is better than the DS version by a huge amount. Donkey Kong Country reinvented. The only thing I would say is, I guess, other than that's not compared to Metroid Prime 3. But we did get the fantastic Metroid Prime trilogy in the second half as well. Stuff like Rhythm Heaven, they kind of gave a new twist to even Mario Party in the second half. We got Punch-Out, which is a game we haven't mentioned, I think is a fantastic and really underrated title for the system. We got Excite Bots, which I think is much better than Excite Truck. So yeah, I think that I just think overall that they were a lot more imaginative, a lot more innovative, and a lot more risky with the second half, and they had a bunch of, and Wii Sports Resorts is a better game than Wii Sports. Well, that's a tough one. I think it's better because of the technology. I think overall Wii Sports is a more cohesive package.
You know, I kind of like the broken motion stuff in the first Wii Sports because I knew how to utilize it. And all of a sudden, I'm back at square one. I'm like, I don't know how to golf or bowl anymore. What's going on? But yeah, no, I agree. Like, Super Mario Galaxy 2 was better than Super Mario Galaxy. The reason why I mentioned the first one so much is just because of the impact, I guess, the first one had. And I spent a lot more time on the first. I think I spent over 100 hours with the first Super Mario Galaxy. Like, I beat that game over and over again. But I agree. But I still have to go through the first half.
Again, it goes back to what you value. I think, you know, if you're going purely based on the fact that this is new and exciting, the first half is much better. You know, the reason the second half is better for me, the reason is that a lot of these things were built on technologies and ideas that Nintendo had to first get out there in the first half. Galaxy 2 wouldn't exist without Galaxy. Wii Sports Resorts wouldn't exist without Wii Sports and stuff like that. And, you know, it's simple to say that a sequel, of course, wouldn't exist without the first one. But, I mean, even from a technological standpoint, that these games went out there, they tried something new with the controllers, and Nintendo had time to earn and evolve the things. And then that's why they came out, and you had these, you know, blockbuster hit after hit after hit. But I just think overall their consistency and their quality was a lot better in the second half of this generation. And I hope we see that. I hope we see this. I guess we'll get to this, and then we'll talk about the legacy of the Wii. Is that where would you place this as far as Nintendo goes in terms of output?
What was the question?
Where would you place the Wii in terms of Nintendo's output? Because, you know, a lot of people say this is the worst Nintendo system ever. Some people say this is the best Nintendo system ever. Some people say that Nintendo abandoned the hardcore game. And some people, you know, this, and that. As far as general overall output goes, where would you rank this among their home consoles?
Okay, so I've been thinking about this a lot, like the whole what is my favorite console of all time discussion. So how do you judge your favorite console of all time? Is it the hardware itself? Is it how it innovated? Is it the games that are put on it? What exactly do you personally judge as the best console? Like, what's the parameters? Or is it a combination of all of them?
For me, it's the parameters is always going to be the games, because technology ages. Like, the Nintendo won't hold up in this day and age, so I can't say that. I can say that, oh, it could have been a technological beast for its day, but that's not going to help it 20 years from now, or 20 years from when it came out. So to me, it's always going to be the games that I think have a special place in my heart, the games that stand out, the games that are memorable for me. And I think that's where, because ultimately, when we look back at the Wii, and this is, you know, 5 and 10 years, are you going to think about the year where there was no games coming out? Or are you going to think about the games that you have for the system, the ones you kept?
Okay. Where it would rank in terms of the Nintendo history? I think the Wii ranks pretty high up there. I think I'd put it over the GameCube, even though, you know, I loved Wind Waker and Super Mario Sunshine. Metal Gear Solid Twin Snakes on it, and so is the Metroid Prime. Wii over GameCube, it's tough between 64 and the Wii, but not over Super Nintendo, I think. Okay, I'm just going to freestyle an order here, so I'm going to say Super NES, Wii, 64, NES, GameCube, I don't know. I'm just putting that out there. Done.
I'm probably the worst person to ask this because, as Earl knows, the only other Nintendo console I've ever owned was the GameCube, which I know is sacrilege to say when you're talking all things Nintendo, but... From what I've seen, and I've of course, played most of the best games on their previous systems through other means, through emulators or through the virtual console. I would definitely put the Wii above the GameCube, not just because of the quantity of games, not necessarily the quality, because I grew into a Nintendo fanboy because of the GameCube, and specifically because of Melee, which was just an amazing game all around. It just encompassed everything that gaming was. So that's basically where I stand on it.
Okay. Just real quick, we're going to bring Anthony in, and he can answer this question. I'm sure he loves to come in for this part. Hi, Anthony.
Hi.
We are determining where would you rank Nintendo's general output on the Wii U compared to their other consoles?
Their general output?
Yeah. Nintendo specifically.
Like their, what are we talking about? Like their launch title? Are we talking about Wii U?
We're talking about the Wii. The Wii's lifespan, the games they put out. Where would you say it ranks as far as Nintendo home consoles go for them?
You know, I understand that a lot of people don't like the Wii and what they did with it, but, I mean, you take a look at their library and what they released. The Wii was very solid for them. They catered to everyone. They catered to, you know, the people they brought in with Wii Sports and Wii Fit and stuff like that, but... I mean, I'm just looking at my library here, and you have the Mario Galaxies, you have the Metroid Prime Trilogies, you have two Zeldas, and, Smash Brothers, Mario Kart. They're hitting all their bases. I just wish they would have done F-Zero. I think a lot of people look back while the GameCube was happening. They were talking about how childish, how kiddy it was, but a lot of people, if you look back on it, the GameCube had some pretty stellar support, though. We had two Prime games, an amazing Zelda game that went off in a different direction, F-Zero, Tales of Symphonia, stuff like that. They got the exclusive for Resident Evil 4 first, so...
Somewhat.
Well, first they did. You know, remember the Capcom 5 that was supposed to be all Nintendo,
yeah.
And I think they all weren't. All of them almost went to other consoles. But
I think several main excuses.
Well, like Kino 3 maybe, but like Beautiful Joe. Didn't Beautiful Joe go to PS2?
Yeah, it went to PS2 with an exclusive character.
Dante. So, I mean, there is some great stuff on GameCube, and that's why I can't decide between the two. And I came in when I heard one of you guys talking about Super Nintendo, and I do love Super Nintendo, I do. But I don't think that I'm old enough to... I grew up on the NES and Genesis. I'm 22. I grew up on those two. For some reason, we skipped up on the Super Nintendo, so I've been catching up on a lot of those classic titles, the Wii's virtual console. So I wouldn't be able to give an accurate call for the Super Nintendo, but for me, it's a tough choice between the GameCube and the Wii.
Okay. I'm just going to throw this out right now. Somebody already mentioned it. It's a much better design than the N64.
Yes.
So that goes without saying. Mm-hmm. I think the N64 is just remembered because it was the it ushered in the era of 3D, and stuff like Mario 64 and Ocarina of Time changed the landscape of gaming.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, Nintendo's output was really dry throughout that era. The NES, I think.
But like, it had a lot of pretty good third-party stuff on the 64.
Yeah, but
as well, like GoldenEye and.
Well, that's a Nintendo title, since it was published by them.
Oh, yeah. Well, I suppose so.
It's always perfect. A lot of the games you would think of on that, I mean, it would be like Turok, the WWE games. Probably hit as far as third-party stuff on the game, the N64 went. The NES is a really tough one to judge, because in context, a lot of it is just that this is where all of our favorite franchises started, so it's always going to hold a special place in your heart. There's only going to be one first Mario game, there's only going to be one first Zelda. It's like,
bringing
back
the video game industry after the crash as well.
Yeah, so it's, you know, the NES, I think, is always going to be that thing that's going to put up, be put on top just because, you know, it gave us our first experience of Mario and Zelda, Metroid, Kirby, and all that other stuff. The SNES, I think, is generally considered their best system. And I think as far as output goes, they were firing on all cylinders. I mean, I don't know anybody who wouldn't have Super Mario World, Into the Past, and Super Metroid up there as three of their favorite Nintendo games. They're the only three of the best games of all time. And, you know, they had Earthbound, they had, you know, Mario Kart, Super Mario Kart, I should say. They were firing on all cylinders with SNES. But I would say
Chrono Trigger, Final Fantasies 4 to 6. That was quite a time, the Super NES.
And I will say, I mean, for me, it comes down to the GameCube and the Wii, because I think they both serve as the evolution of Nintendo's vision and where they want to take gaming. And I think what we see, you know, like the GameCube has games that the Wii doesn't have. It has an F-Zero, the best F-Zero to me. The only one actually enjoying the franchise. It has, two Star Fox games, take them as you will. it has little neat stuff like Chibi Robot, and it was the start of Animal Crossing and Cubivore. Luigi's Mansion, Pikmin, Eternal Darkness, Metroid Prime, stuff like that, and I don't think, you know, there's very few things that can replace it. But overall, I mean, like I said, I would say that the Wii, to me, has Nintendo's most complete and most well-rounded lineup. I mean, we had stuff, again, like I said, you had stuff for everybody. You had your Wii Sports, your Wii Sports Resorts, your Wii Play, your Wii Music, your Wii Fit. You know, you had your Fitness Gurus, you had your Sports Addicts and stuff like that. Then you had two Zelda games, one of which I considered one of the best in the franchise, and then we had Twilight Princess. We have three Mario games, and I would put any three of those up against any other game in the franchise as some of the best in the series.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I agree. Yeah. Wii was awesome. Like, solid lineup. I think it's just the fact that gamers are getting more cynical as the years go on. So that's why there's a lot of hatred, and you can't satisfy the populace anymore.
You will never be able to satisfy everybody. But like we said before, I think, you know, part of it does say on Nintendo. Part of it was that huge drought in 2008 after Smash Brothers Brawl, where they didn't have anything. Part of it was that they never really aggressively sought out third-party titles. I mean, they didn't get Call of Duty until Modern Warfare 1 came out. Well, they got World at War, and they got Modern Warfare two years after.
What's the subtitle for that one? What's it like?
Reflex? Yeah. I mean, even in early 2009, what they kind of fed on was they re-released older games with the new Play Control system. New Play Control Mario Power Tennis, new Play Control Pikmin, new Play Control Donkey Kong Jungle Beat, and stuff like that. That didn't help endure people to them either, because you're coming out of this huge drought and the first sign of water is like something that somebody's already pissed in. So yeah, they didn't help themselves. But if you were to take their lineup, just separate it, you know, remove yourself from the Wii and its system, and you know its piles of shovelware and third party, and you take it and you bring it 10 years into the future, I think it would be comparable to any other Nintendo system, and I think it would do better than any of their systems in the past three generations. Which I think is a huge thing, because you know, they've been slowly trying to recover. And they've, you know, not only that, but they've expanded the reach of their franchises. Mario Kart, as I mentioned earlier, is a 30 million selling franchise right now. 2D Mario is a 25 million selling franchise. Wii Sports is a 25 million selling franchise. Well, Wii Sports is always hard to judge, but 3D Marios have done better than it's done ever. We've, you know, Zelda, sadly enough, the best selling Zelda game on the Wii is actually Crossbow Training.
But the game was like $30, so I mean,
and it came. It was $20, and it came with
the zapper.
We didn't even speak of the plastic accessories, but yeah. And like I said before, just in this past 2 years, with stuff like Donkey Kong Country Returns, Kirby's Epic Yarn, you know, Kirby's Return to Dreamland, Skyward Sword, Xenoblade, the last story, they've been hitting it out of the park with, you know, one, new IPs, which I think is something people always
you know, give them crap for, and they've done that. They've had new IPs, they had new exciting IPs, and they had quote-unquote hardcore IPs. They were able to evolve some of their classic franchises and take them in directions that we've never seen before. People may not like it for that, and we've seen Skyward Sword, but they were brave enough to do it. I mean, Kirby's Epic Yarn would be a huge departure from any franchise, and stuff like that. We've seen them try novel things that didn't really necessarily work with Wii Music, and you know, stuff that remained in Japan, like Kiki Trick and Disaster Dare Crisis. We had Endless Ocean, which was a really weird game.
We had two of those, didn't we?
Yeah, we had two of those.
One of them you could actually go online and swim with your friends.
Yes.
That was their ass online game.
That's right. The second one you could. The first one you could use your own soundtrack in. Which was another feature that wasn't used.
They dropped.
Yeah.
I think there's only two games that support it, which is the Flight Truck. Thank God for that, because the soundtrack is awful. and this Ocean. Yes, they've had some terrible things. They made Wii Music. They made Poke Park. I still don't know why Poke Park exists. Frank Smash, which I think a lot of people forget, wasn't that great. Super Paper Mario won't ever go down as my favorite Paper Mario game. They took games that didn't necessarily need to be made into Wii games. I don't think anybody cares about Donkey Kong Barrel, but yes, I completely forgot that existed. overall, I think it will stand the test of time as one of as far as Nintendo goes for games, it will stand the test of time as one of their best consoles. But I guess we can transition to this, and Jason's already touched on this, and we've kind of talked about it before, is ultimately what will be the legacy of the Wii.
Well, it was just the expanding the audience beyond what people thought was normal, just touching on everything that they could.
Yeah, and pioneering the motion controls, like Jason said earlier. He really hit the nail on the head when he mentioned those two points specifically. And if I had to put a third point, I guess just proving to the world that Nintendo still got it with, you know, not many franchises can say that, you know, they've been around 25 years making Mario games and it's still good after every installment. So, the first-party games proving to the world that they're still one of the kings in making their own stuff still fun and relevant in the changing console market.
I think we kind of touched on. We've kind of hinted at this with the answers, but another thing that is that it also proves that technology isn't the end-all, be-all as far as video game advancements go. That as much as we like to say, you know, you want more polygons, you want more power, you want better AI, is that at the end of the day, a good game is a good game, no matter what's underneath the hood of the system. And I think that's important lesson to learn, especially in light of this generation, where so many people have kind of struggled with the fact that they've tried to keep up with this tech arm race, that you don't necessarily need to do that if you can create a compelling, engaging experience for the user that is unique. And not necessarily, you know, I hate to use the word gimmick, but not necessarily, you know, predicated on the fact that this is a motion game, so we're going to buy it because it's motion, but a really well-crafted game that happens to use motion. I think the other legacy that the Wii leaves behind, and this is probably is the fact that I think this was a rude awakening for a lot of people, is that hardcore gamers aren't the center of the universe anymore.
No, they never were, really. It was
they never were, but you could always exist in that bubble that you were, because that's what the video game magazines told you, that's what the websites told you, that's what advertising told you, is that you were the center of the universe. You were the market that everybody had to cater to, because you couldn't be a success without that core market. And Nintendo proved that you can expand beyond them, and you can appeal to people beyond them, and you can even not have their support for most of this generation and still do well. Yes, the Wii has teetered off big time in the past 3 years, but I don't think anybody would deny that it was, I mean, for it had a rocket jump of a start, and it showed that there were people out there who wanted something new, something exciting, something different, and they got it. The problem now is trying to convince those people to stick around. Anthony, do you have anything to add?
Regarding that?
Just regarding the Wii's legacy, what do you think ultimately it will be remembered as or for? Or...
Well, I mean, it's going to be obviously, it's going to be remembered as what the system that took away just simple button engagement in games, that motion was possible. And Sony and Microsoft tried to follow suit, but I mean, you can kind of tell that motion's kind of fading away. I mean, one of the key titles in the Wii U's launch isn't a motion control type Wii Sports, but it's Sing It, which is, I mean, you're still, you know, not pushing buttons or anything, but you're using a tablet for lyrics and stuff, but it's...
Well, I mean, that's kind of, because it is part of Sing It, Sing Party, I should say, is that it's a part of it. It's supposed to be that you get people in the room up and dancing with you. So it's still, I think the idea of motion gaming is nice, but I think it's kind of what, we've kind of hit the point where it's more active gaming, where you want people in the room to be involved with you playing the game, and I think that's what Nintendo ultimately was trying to do with the Wii and the Wii U.
Yeah. I mean, and as I was saying that, I'm realizing, oh yeah, because you have Nintendo Land, and you have, take the Link's, the Zelda portion of it, the people controlling the sword avatars are going to have a sword, and it's going to be using a Zelda Skyward Sword like control scheme, and it's nice to say that that's not something that, you know, how's the sword working, it's just something that's accepted, and it's just the control scheme for that, and it works, and you move on. So it's not becoming it's when it's a gimmick. You had older games like, I don't know, I think right now I think of some of the older Wii titles where you would just waggle, and you waggle to jump, or you waggle to swing a sword. I mean, you heard that all the time in 2006, 2007, waggle, waggle, waggle. But now it's being used for more finesse, more, I guess, appropriate controls.
It's a motion control Pac-Man, waggle, waggle, waggle. But yeah, I mean, we've mentioned, and sometimes it even happens in good games. Like, I think the Blob is a great game, but it's one of those games where you waggle, you have to use the...
I hated that, and, I'll be honest. I hated
waggle. Yeah, I hated that too, and it was like, it was a good game in spite of that addition.
Didn't the Blob 2 have a button for jump?
Yeah.
Yes.
Good on them.
I think enough people complained about it that they changed it.
Yeah. Well,
and I think
you look at some of the titles that easily could have, like, let's say Punch-Out gave the option for nunchuck and Wii Remote motion control, but, I mean, anyone in their right mind that knew what they were playing would, you know, hold it NES style on their side.
Did anybody try to the Wii Balance Board version of it?
I tried it once just to try it, and it was a mess. It was hilarious, but it was a mess.
that was like bad. Like that happens a lot of times where Nintendo's just like, we have this, we have to try to get this, we have to try to include this, and it doesn't make any sense whatsoever to include Balance Board support and Punch Out, but they did. Just to kind of wrap it up, I think that part of the legacy of the Wii is the fact that Nintendo. It's the point where Nintendo began to alienate people. Not necessarily of their own doing, but I just think that people have... It's not necessarily the Wii in itself, but taking the last 15, 16 years of Nintendo's general system support, I think it's gotten to the point where people are just like, you know, we can't expect the Assassin's Creed, the Final Fantasies, the Call of Duties, the Maddens and stuff like that to come to these Nintendo systems. So we're kind of at the point where we don't want Nintendo franchises anymore, and they're not offering us anything different and new anymore. And you've had people who kind of felt that Nintendo betrayed them, alienated them, abandoned them, left them for that reason. And I think that will be part of Nintendo's, of the Wii U's legacy, is just this notion, this belief, that this is when Nintendo started to lose people. And I think it's going to be something that hangs over Nintendo's head. I mean, it's something that's already hanging over their head as they try to make the transition into the Wii U next week, is that you already have people who are like, you know what, I don't want to invest in the system, so I'm only going to buy one game for it, or I'm not just going to buy it for Zelda and this and that. So I think it's something that they need to combat early on with the Wii U, and they're trying, but there's still going to be that crowd that hangs over their head for some time because of this system. And sadly, that is going to be part of the legacy of this system for quite some time. The same way that, it, you know, being a kiddie system holds over the head of the Nintendo 64.
Well, hey, I gotta head out for now. Just let you know, Paper Mario is fun. The reviewers do have a couple legitimate gripes regarding the boss battle in particular, with certain huge stickers that that are super effective. You don't really know that well. So IGN's right here, Cam Shea put it right. When you have to die and you have to go play him again, do kind of well, then he'll tell you what sticker you need, and then you try him a third time, and that's how you get a super effective hit damage. Otherwise, you use all the stickers in your sticker book, and you do just get coins for winning. So just let you know, if you run from battle, the enemy disappears anyway. So
okay, but before you deck out, finally, just one more question for you: what is your favorite Wii title?
My favorite Wii title? Wow. I'm honestly thinking it'd be Skyward Sword. I had so much fun. I mean, a lot of that has to do with, you know, the surrounding stuff that was going on. I had two great roommates my senior year in college, which was going very, very well. Like, I went to school, I got back, we all immediately got in front of the TV and just played Skyward Sword for a couple hours, and it was a really, really fun experience. But I think right behind that is probably Galaxy 1 or 2. I can't decide.
Okay, well, thank you for joining us, and we'll catch you next week.
Catch you guys later.
So yeah, I guess
later.
I guess to be an egomaniac now, I get to end it with my favorite Wii game, just because I'm awesome like that. I will just say, you know, I'm gonna pick two different titles. I put the system on the website. I'm gonna pick the best Wii title and the best Wii title. And when I use the term Wii, it sounds kiddish anyhow, but I usually use that to refer to the best game that kind of showed the potential, the capabilities of the Wii. My favorite Wii game is the Galaxy franchise. The two Galaxy games, I think, are phenomenal. I've said it before, they're two of my favorite games of all time. They are easy. There are a few games I call instant classics, and both of them are, and I easily put them up as the best games of this generation. But if you were to take Galaxy and put it on any other Nintendo system, it wouldn't have changed that much, with, you know, some minor alterations to it, but the core game would have been the same. So it's not something that's necessarily needed on the Wii. So when I use the term Wii game, I usually refer to something, and I've said this before. Skyward Sword is a game that encompasses the Wii. Like, there is no other system on the planet that can do Skyward Sword. I mean, I guess you can do it with the Move now, but there's no other system that can actually do Skyward Sword as well as it's done on the Wii without changing the core game a lot. And I guess even you can even do it with the Move, because you can't use, like, the shield bashing move with the nunchuck. And Skyward Sword, you know, it used motion in a lot of ways. Even simple things like picking items became easier. Switching items, you know, additions like the beetle and the whip became integral parts of the game, the design and stuff like that. Camera control, even if it's not the best, is something that's, again, added on by motion. And of course, sword fighting, which not only involved the sword fighting in the Zelda game, but actually made combat a core component of Zelda games. Because while you always had combat in Zelda games, they were never really a big part because they were never that difficult. It was just about timing and hitting people, where this is more of a little puzzle with every enemy. The Garahan fights in those games are frustrating because you have to be so precise against him.
Yeah, the Garahan fights start to become very fun once you actually know what you're doing. Like, the first couple battles with him was very frustrating for me, and until I realized, like, the secret, like, how to actually utilize the Motion Plus to my benefit and understand that system, then it started becoming pretty, like, the last Garahim fight and the boss after that. I'm not sure if the time limit has passed to give away spoilers, so I'm just going to say the boss after Garahim were awesome, and yeah, once you know what to do, that game is, like, the Motion Plus stuff is utilized with very, very precise finesse. And yeah, you're right. It is like a puzzle with every battle. It's a puzzle in between every dungeon. Yeah, it was quite a unique experience.
Yeah, and I consider that the best example of the Wii's potential. Yes, it took them 5 years to 6 years for them to ultimately get there, but they got there. And I think you can say, I mean, I think there are other games, like I said, I've always mentioned Mario Steel 2, but now you can say that if you want to say, did the Wii ever live up to its potential, you point people to Skyward Sword and say, yes, it did. And I think, you know, and of course, it's only fitting that Mario and Zelda defines a Nintendo system, as they have for, I would say the only system they haven't defined for Nintendo is the GameCube, which I feel was defined by Metroid Prime.
In a way, I still think Wind Waker could be argued to
define. I think Wind Waker and Sunshine are good games, but I mean, when you think of a game when people think of the best GameCube game, it's always Prime. To a lot of people, I prefer Wind Waker.
I think if I had to pinpoint one game for the GameCube, it'd be Wind Waker for me. That game was like pretty much my favorite Zelda overall. It's either that or Link to the Past. It's my favorite all time Zelda. But Wind Waker is high up there, and it's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, we've had diverse picks. We've had, you know, Donkey Kong and Rhythm Heaven and stuff like that. But ultimately, I think when people look back at the Wii, the first two games that are going to pop into your head are Skyward Sword and Super Mario Galaxy. The same way that the first two games that pop into your head when you think of the N64 is Super Mario 64 and Ocarina of Time and Link to the Past and Super Mario World and, you know, Legend of Zelda and Super Mario Brothers for NES and stuff like that. And I think, you know, it's just fitting that Nintendo's most recent system is once again defined. And I guess, you know, the third pillar of that would be Wii Sports, which represented something completely different from those two. But, I mean, honestly, Wii Sports will be one of those games. It's one of the most influential games of this generation, hands down.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, when people think back on the Wii, I think Wii Sports is probably going to come up right away.
And this is me getting into that attitude that I was amassed in earlier before. This is me thinking as a quote, you know, when IGN has their list and when GameSpot has their list and Giant Bomb and even NeoGAF, the first thing that people are going to say is going to be a Galaxy and Skyward Sword. But it's really, really short-sighted of me to not think of Wii Sports. I mean, yes, it came with the system, so everybody owned it, but that's a game that you show to your mom, your dad, your friends, your cousins, you know, schoolmates and coworkers and stuff like that, and that's what got them to buy that system.
The game that changed the generation.
Exactly. So, it's short-sighted to not mention Wii Sports in that context as being something that not just defined the system, but defined a generation. Like, you can say HD gaming was big, and you can say online gaming was a big thing, but I did not see Nintendo embracing HD gaming until this year, but I saw a Kinect and a Move out on the market within 3 years of the Wii. So there's that. And I think, I mean, that's a wrap. We're gonna pull down the curtains, we're gonna knock up the shop, we're gonna turn off the light on the Wii. As we look forward to the future, and Nintendo is ready with that, and as of this recording, we are 8 days away from the launch of the Wii U, and we will look forward to that and all that brings. And I have no idea when we're actually going to talk about it. I don't know when anybody on the podcast is actually getting one.
I have it pre-ordered. I'll be getting it on launch, so that's it's going to be exciting.
I won't be able to get mine until February, but I'll be getting quite a few games with it, so.
Yeah, I'm probably going to hold off until next year. We shall see. But yes, I want to thank Jason and Anthony who had, you know, jumped in and out of here. And I want to thank Mr. Johnny Ace and Phil for joining us this week. This has been Do Wilden's Wii Retrospective. We'll catch you again next week.